This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen of the police, don't worry, this is just what happens when the government fucks the people. The people, strangely enough, will fight back. We are human beings, and when we get treated like cattle, we will react like independent, sovereign human beings. Anyway, your policing here has failed today. The building has been totally stormed. The building has been trashed, and the people have spoken by occupying and destroying one of the enemy headquarters.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine, where every day is Taco Tuesday.
Do you want a taco?
I am your host, Estimulator, and in November, students and troublemakers ace their degrees in rabble-rousing.
No ace, no cuts, no education cuts! No ace, no cuts, no education cuts!
In Dublin, higher education cuts pissed off the fighting Irish, who mobilized a massive mob of over 40,000 angry students. A large contingent within the march broke off and attempted to occupy the Department of Finance building. About 40 peeps from the motherfucking resistance got in, but riot pigs soon blockaded the entrance and started unleashing their violence on their students. Three freedom fighters were arrested. Student angst against cuts is contagious, and the anarchist virus infected many within the 50,000 protesters that marched in London. Thousands left the managed march and proceeded to take over the Conservative Party's headquarters, a massive fucking building on the most surveilled city in the motherfucking world. The motherfucking resistance easily overpowered the limey pigs, and a group was able to make it to the roof, where red and black flags were flown, and used their advantageous position to hurl projectiles at the popo.
London calling to the faraway towns, now war is declared.
I absolutely condemn the actions of a small minority who have used violent means to hijack this protest. 50,000 students came here to make a peaceful protest about a serious issue which is very important. And if some people think it's appropriate to use violence, it's an utter disgrace, and they have completely hijacked the...
Oh, shut your taco hole, you fucking wanker. Even though the National Union of Students condemned the riot, many felt it was a smashing success.
Okay, well, here we are inside the Conservative Party headquarters. As you can see, the people have fully taken over the building. I've heard reports from people who have been upstairs. There's flooding, there's fires. The roof has been occupied, and there's a small line of riot police and about 10,000 people outside. So it seems that numbers are on the side of the people today.
A few years ago, I reported on the garbage crisis in the southern city of Naples. Citizens were pissed about the shitty conditions of the dump, and it seems that years later, the situation has not improved.
Sono una minaccia terribile per la salute dei nostri.
It's a threat to the health of our patients. Cancers of the airways, of the gastrointestinal system, breast cancers, blood cancers are all on the rise here.
The anger over the poorly managed dump prompted the motherfucking resistance to block access to it and defended themselves against the attacks by the pigs with a barrage of fireworks.
Wait, here comes the crescendo!
Peeps in Athens have gone postal as a wave of mail bombs took Athens by storm, Ted Kaczynski style. The pyro parcels were meant to deliver explosive tacos to European leaders who have been serving shit tacos to the working class for the past couple of years. In the hit list were mega perverts Nicolas Sarkozy and Silvio Berlusconi, as well as German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Two members of the group,
Conspiracy of Cells of Fire,
have been arrested in connection to the mail bombs. In Indigenous Resistance News, the Sinaiax Nation blockaded a logging road and established a protection camp that halted all timber exploitation in the area. The Sinaiax took this drastic action because the fucknuts from the BC government refused to consult with them about logging in their traditional lands. The blockade held long enough for a court challenge to make it through the legal system, and the judge issued an injunction to halt any logging until the hearing happens. In more good motherfucking news, the proposed mine at Fish Lake was scrapped by the Canadian government. The lake-destroying taco scrotum munchers at Taseko Mines wanted to use Fish Lake as a tailings pond for their stupid fucking land-destroying project. Elders of the Chicotlan people, whose land would have been decimated by this moronic mine, threatened to show up with shotguns if the project was approved. This has prompted speculation on whether the crack-inhaling Canadian Prime Minister was just trying to avoid another Oka crisis. You know, when the Mohawks kicked the motherfucking ass of the army and the pigs to defend their sacred land. Following the announcement, Taseko Mine stock dropped 25%. Last but not least, remember this douchebag? Yep, the number one killer of Iraqi babies, number two being Billy Clint, has been media whoring so that American idiots buy his trashy novel about his romance with your Lord and Savior, Jesus H. Christ. In that fucking waste of dead trees, W. says that his worst moment in the White House was when Kanye West called him a racist.
I would tell George Bush, in my moment of frustration, I didn't have the grounds to call him a racist.
What? Kanye, what the fuck? That's the only half-decent thing you've done in your shitty-ass poor excuse for a hip-hop producer career. You own that shit, you motherfucker. That's right. I did it too. I called you a racist, you miserable piece of shit. And you know what? I ain't sorry.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
I ain't saying he's a gold digger. But he ain't messing with no broke niggas. I ain't saying he a gold digger. But he ain't messing with no broke niggas. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black sheets. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people.
In just a few weeks, I'll be heading down to the land of tacos to cover the motherfucking resistance in action during the COP16 climate clusterfuck in Cancun. The COP16 is the follow-up to last year's disastrous meeting of world leaders in Denmark. The leaders were supposed to take decisive action on climate change, but instead they decided to take part in one massive circle jerk while the well-funded enviro groups did their best to pacify the motherfucking resistance on the cold streets of Copenhagen. Predictably, some motherfuckers who watch this show will be throwing hissy fits right about now about the global conspiracy to dupe the world about climate change. This shit is so fucking sad that it makes me want to strap you all down to a chair and make you watch the most dry and boring James Hansen speeches while listening to Beethoven.
The climate and energy bills in Congress were designed by big banks and fat cat environmental organizations that have lost touch with the people of nature.
Give me up.
But before I go, I want to find out more about what to expect. To help me out, I spoke with El Cuchillo Turco, which roughly translates to the Turkish dagger. Oye Turco, how the fuck are you?
Pretty fucking good. How the fuck are you?
Me? Getting ready to eat more tacos than your mama on Taco Tuesdays at Taco Bell.
Nice.
So, just what the fuck happens at these COP climate clusterfucks?
There's been 15, and the 16th is going to happen in Cancun at the end of November and December. And more than anything, it's an exercise in misdirection. So the people of the world are told that this body of world governments are coming together underneath the United Nations in order to slow down the negative environmental consequences of human industrial activity, while in reality they're forging methods in order to further facilitate the pillage of nature, but underneath the guise of sustainability and greenness. And as far as the bureaucratic details go, you know, after the failure of the talks in Copenhagen last December, the international negotiations around emissions cuts have been at a standstill at best. And at this upcoming meeting, there is not much hope of an agreement that's going to come out of it. And many people are already expecting a failure of the negotiations. But what I've been able to glean and my sense is that in order to save face, most of the governments are going to concentrate on what is called RED, an agreement of RED. And RED stands for reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation. And now it's been upgraded to RED Plus. And basically, this will put forests further into the logic of the market, and it will actually facilitate the continuation of industrial pollution.
After seeing the posters and the videos from the anarchists for the COP15 in Denmark, I thought there was going to be a motherfucking riot. Then I read that the environmental NGOs and Naomi Klein chill motherfuckers out.
If this turns into a riot, it's gonna be a riot. We know this story. I'm not saying it's not an interesting story, but it is what it is. It's only one story. It will turn into that. So I understand the question about how do we take care of each other, but I disagree that that means fighting the cops.
Just what the fuck happened?
It's too easy to point blame at, you know, this or that person for controlling social movements, but in reality the issue is much more profound, no? We should look and regard Klein and the others who were at the COP15 in Denmark and organize those who came to protest into a big lobbying effort as both, you know, mere examples of the historical dangers that try to fold antagonistic social movements into acceptable forms of protest. And your viewers are familiar with this because they were able to observe Naomi Klein's despicable performance in Toronto during the G20 summits. But in this particular case, more importantly, we should see them as symptoms of a deep contradiction that lies at the heart of the climate movement. So there's this fog of carbon dioxide in front of us that is preventing us from, you know, calling a spade, and many of the large NGOs and famous figures who unfortunately have influence over street-level politics and actions have adopted a stance of what we can call kumbaya-nismo, that we are all in this together, that we are all responsible, that the most important thing for the future of humanity is that the COP summit come to an agreement on 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide, blah, blah, blah. Of course, this is somewhat of a schism, considering that these climate mobilizations are arising out of, or at least hope to garner the energy of, the anti-globalization movement that was very effective at the turn of the century. At the international rendezvous of that period, there was less gray area infecting the terrain of struggle, and it was crystal clear who was the enemy and what had to be done. Now, today we are in the grips of a shallow environmentalism that equates molecules with temperature and obscures the political power structures that need to be destroyed in order to avoid ecological collapse. And most of these figures also argue that the United Nations is a different body and much more pluralistic than the WTO or the G20 or the IMF and the World Bank, etc. But for those of us who see the origins of our misery as not only arising from capital, but also the state, this line of argument is clearly bullshit. Not to mention how quickly we have forgotten the historic legitimation that the United Nations has played for imperialist powers and capital. The decade-long United Nations sanctions against Iraq, which took the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, are just one example to the role that the United Nations has played.
Speaking of Naomi Klein, she and some other peeps have been pushing the idea of climate debt. Just what the fuck is climate debt? And what do you think about it?
It basically argues that since most of the emissions have been produced by the industrial north, these countries owe some sort of monetary sum to the countries of the south who will feel the effects of climate change. Now, the north-south or center-periphery power divide was a useful analytical tool for the anti-globalization movement, which as one of its goals had the elimination of third world debt from the ledgers of neoliberal institutions. But the concept of climate debt not only continues to equate nature with dollars, but also demonstrates solidarity with the often corrupt third world governments rather than the social movements in those places.
And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World, So No, I Don't Feel Fine. Many thanks to all the peeps who donated to make this relentless barrage of expletives possible. Samantha, Marcus, Jonathan, Casey, Rodney, Carol, Mark, Dan, Noah, Jim, Audrey, Sakura, Michael, Stephen, Jay, Landon, James, Courtney, Will, Thomas, Carlos, John, David, Sarah, Ravi, and Lindsay. Meepoki, I also want to let you motherfuckers know that some media is taking NSIV on the road next year, so if you want to book a screening in your town, just visit NSIV.com. To come in on this show, or for links to X and Secrets, just visit my motherfucking website, stimulator.tv. Now it's taco time.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high quality video of this show at submedia.tv.